Let's go ahead and open the Bibles to Joshua chapter 3, verse 14. We are developing a very significant story with the crossing of the Jordan River by the Israelis into the Promised Land for the very first time in their history. And God does it miraculously. And I really want you to use your imagination to picture how significant this event is. So here you have several hundreds of thousands of men and their families gathered along the flood stage Jordan on the east. The Ark of the Covenant is probably toward the center of this stretched out company. And they're supposed to be staying back about 3 football lengths away from it. And Joshua is addressing them, telling them, God is going to take you over in a very impressive way to show you what he can and will do for you if you will just trust him. God has also told Joshua that this is going to make him a very impressive figure for all of these people that are following him as the new leader. So the Jordan River that you see today in pictures, and for those of you that have visited, you've seen it in person, is not nearly as impressive as the Jordan River of Joshua's day. And there's good reasons for that. One of the most significant is the Jordan River today is being tapped up and down its length by heavy-duty users of water. And so this is one of the reasons that the Dead Sea is getting smaller and smaller, and why the Jordan River is a mere trickle compared to its old way of flowing. I would guess that at flood stage, the Jordan River would have looked something like the St. Joseph River that flows into the Michigan Lake, Lake Michigan, and passes through a lot of our communities that we're very familiar with. You wouldn't want to be messing with it to try to get stuff across it. So the Jordan River at flood stage was not something that you'd want to try to get across. And so we have the Ark of God with the presence of God going up as that very strong cloud above that goes up into a canopy over the people of Israel. And the ark is right there at the edge of the floodwaters that's lapping up by their feet. And then this happens, verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, as soon as those bearing the ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all its banks during the time of the harvest, the waters coming down from above, that is, from the north, stood and rose up in a heap far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan, and those flowing down toward the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, we know it as the Dead Sea today, were completely cut off. So there's some confusion, I think, in a lot of the commentaries, as if the Israeli people could see the water piling up off to their right, to the north. That would not be the case. The city of Zarethan is known to be about 40 miles to the north of this crossing site. And that's where the barricade of God was put in place. And so that water started filling up in an area of the Jordan Valley, just to the south of the ancient city of Beth Shan. And you can find that on a Google map Google Earth map if you look for it. And so they wouldn't have seen any of that. This is what they would have seen, though. The priests walk into the water, and as they walk westward, the water keeps disappearing. It keeps going down. They never get any deeper than their ankles in water, which means that God had to turn the water off way up north, 40-some miles, about 10 or more hours earlier for the water to do that. So this is an amazing bit of timing on God's part, working with Joshua to make sure that everything happened perfectly. Now, the other thing is that God dries out the mud that is left behind by floodwaters when they recede, so that the people passed over opposite Jericho. They're about 6 miles east of Jericho, by the way, at this crossing site. Now, the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. So they get down in the bottom of the bed of the Jordan, because the Jordan's gone now. It's dried up. It's being held back about 40 miles to the north. And then all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. And so they would have flowed around the Ark of the Covenant at God's command, about 3 football lengths away from the Ark itself. And I think they probably would have flown, they would have flowed around in their tribal groups on both sides, north and south. The crossing bracket that we're looking at here is about 4 miles wide. It's determined by a wadi on the north and a wadi on the south of the plain of Jericho. 4 miles between those two mouths. Wadi is a wet weather stream, and they tend to have fairly significant gullies of erosion whenever they're dry. Now, these would have been pretty wet at this time because it's flood stage. More than likely, God would have dried them up as well, so that there's not even a trickle coming from them. So this passing over the Jordan on dry land is going to take a couple of hours at least, even if they're moving at the fastest rate possible. And all that time, the Jordan has stopped flowing way up to the north about 40 miles. Verse 1 of chapter 4. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, so a few hours later, He Who Is said to Joshua, take the 12 men from the people, from each tribe of man, and command them, saying, take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you will lodge tonight. Now, he's already selected these guys at the beginning of the day. Remember, this is all happening on the 10th day of the first month of the Jewish year in the 41st year of the Exodus. So we're talking about April of 1416 BC. So he selected one guy from each of the 12 tribes and had them on standby. God now tells him, have those guys go down where the ark's at. They have my permission to break that, 3,000-foot barrier. And I think I might have done that wrong in my head about the football lengths, didn't I? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not going to worry about that right now. So anyway, they're allowed to break that isolation barrier, and they go down right where the priests are standing. They pick up 12 stones from the bottom of the Jordan bed. Now, how big they were, I don't know. I don't think they were pebble size. I think they picked up significant memorial stones. And they're going to take them over to the place that will eventually be named Gilgal on the western side of the Jordan. Then, verse 5, Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of he who is your God into the midst of Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of he who is. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. So this is going to be piled up as a memorial marker. This is the site where Israel encamped immediately after their supernatural crossing of the Jordan on dry land. Verse number 8. The people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded, took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as he who is told Joshua. They carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and they laid them down there. And then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. So Joshua goes one more step. Not only does he have the memorial marker at the future site of Gilgal on the western side, he says, let's pile up 12 stones right at the spot where the ark was for these several hours in the bed of the Jordan River. Now, where they are at is one of the fords of the Jordan. That is, it's one of the places known to have kind of a stronger bottom to it that doesn't erode and therefore is more shallow and allows people to cross over it by wading during the normal time of the Jordan River's lifespan or its life cycle. So they pile this pile of rocks up in such a way at the ford that in the times where the Jordan is down and people can just wade across here, they'd be able to see this marker of stones. And whoever it is that has added this line as a prophet later says those stones are there even to this day, meaning you can go and see them for yourself even right now. Then verse 10, for the priest bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that he who has commanded Joshua to tell the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people passed over in haste. So they're not being slow about it. They're being quick. They're moving. And when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of he who is and the priest passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed for the people of Israel, as Moses had told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before he who is to battle to the plains of Jericho. Now, this is interesting because we have the census numbers for these tribes. The tribe of Reuben had over 43,000. The tribe of Gad had over 40,000. And the tribe of Manasseh, the whole tribe, had 52,000 plus. And we're only talking about half of them. So we're talking about maybe at least 20, 25,000, something in that neighborhood. So between these two tribes, Reuben and Gad, and the half-tribe, Asher, there's over 100,000 armed militia members, and yet there's only 40,000 of them in this number that's passing over. And the reason for that, I think, is because these guys are the representative sample of those tribes that will be the fighting force vanguard in the conquest of the Promised Land. The rest of their fighting men, the rest of their militia members, are back in their home territory on the eastern side in the annexed territories, keeping track of the women and the children and the animals that have been left there. All right, so back to the text again. Verse 14, on that day, he who is exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. So this is impressive. This is Joshua's first miracle. He has the people cross on dry ground through the flood stage Jordan. This cannot be denied. It is a shocking thing to happen. And so the people are impressed. I would be interested to know what the commentary was by the oldest people in the tribes of Israel at this time, because they would have been the teenagers at the time of the crossing of the Red Sea. And so now this is what they're going to relate that to, is, oh man, this is just like the crossing of the Red Sea. We're going through a place where there used to be water, and the ground is dry, it's not muddy. This is the hand of God, no doubt about it. Joshua is God's man. And so they would have very much affirmed his leadership as being from God, because God's doing miracles for him. Verse number 15. And he who is said to Joshua, command the priests bearing the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan. So they've been standing there for a few hours now. So Joshua commanded the priests, come up out of the Jordan. And when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. So now we have a reverse miracle of timing. As the priests come out of the bed of the Jordan, the water starts flowing again and comes up eventually to its high water mark, because the water is, the Jordan is at flood stage at this time of year. So it comes up to its high water mark at exactly the same time that the priests walk out of that high water mark, which means that God had to have released the piled up water 40 miles to the north several hours earlier, so that they would arrive at this exact moment. So God knew well ahead of time when the priests would go into the River Jordan, how long they would remain in the bed of the Jordan, and exactly when they cleared the high water mark of the Jordan, so that he could have the water be out of their way only the exact amount of time it needed to be out of their way. It's just absolutely stunning, the sort of miracle that's happening here. And think about the impact this has on the Canaanites. You know, there's zero doubt about it, that word of the Israelis now being up against the eastern side of the Jordan would have shot through the Jericho community, because they would have seen the moving of the cloud of God away from where they've been seeing it for the last several months. And Jericho probably would have brought all their people in out of the fields and locked their gates and kept everybody away from the region between the city and the area where the Israelis are coming across, which is about 6 miles away, by the way. All up and down the Jordan, any of the Canaanites that were working in the fields or working with the date palm plantations and things like that, they would have noticed the Jordan disappearing, and it would have freaked them out. And they would have probably run away because they wouldn't have understood what was going on. The people, the Canaanites living way up to the north where the waters piled up in the fields that are there in that part of the Jordan Valley to the south of Beth Shan, those fields would have been flooded by the Jordan, coming even farther out of its banks. and they would have seen that they were piled up, not being allowed to go south any farther. And that would have freaked all of them out as well, terrorized them. And so this day is a day in which the Canaanites had even more proof that the God of the Israelis was coming to kick them out of the land. Remember, 500 years earlier, Abraham had been told by God that the sins of the Amorites, the sins of the Canaanites, are not yet to their fullness. But when they do come to their fullness, I will bring your seed back into the land and give them this land for their inheritance. So all that's happening now, and the Canaanites may have had prophets through the years from God warning them that they needed to repent or this was going to happen. Well, now the day of reckoning has arrived. Verse number 19 of chapter number 4. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. Now, this is in April of 1416 BC, the 10th day of the first Jewish month, very significant on the calendar because that's the day the Israelis were supposed to designate their Passover lamb. So they would have done that also on this day. So they encamped at Gilgal. That's not its name yet. That will happen later. It's somewhere probably a couple of miles to the west of the crossing site, well up out of the floodplain, and probably at the edge of the agricultural developed areas of the plains of Jericho, the grain fields and the tree plantations that are going to be part of the city-state of Jericho. They're probably right in the edge of the green area. So they're on the east border of Jericho, it says, and so they're about 4 miles away from the walls of Jericho. Verse 20, and those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall tell, let your children know, Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For he who is your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as he who is your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us as we passed over. And so all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of he who is mighty, that you may fear he who is your God forever. So this memorial goes up at this site, and this site eventually becomes the site of Gilgal, which is mentioned several different times in the stories of Joshua. Now, there will be another Gilgal up in the hill country, up in the ridgeline of central Israel. And sometimes it'll be kind of confusing which Gilgal we're talking about, and we'll try to distinguish that later. Chapter number 5. As soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that he who is had dried up the waters of Jordan for the people of Israel until they'd crossed over, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. So they are scared to death. And this is God's intention as part of the way of clearing the land out for the Israelis. Verse 2, at that time, he who is said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the sons of Israel a second time. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeoth Ha'arlot. Now, this is the first name given to this site. It means the hill of foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the males of the people who had come out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they'd come out of Egypt. Though all the people who had come out had been circumcised, yet all the people who were born on the way in the wilderness after they had come out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the people of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all that nation, the men of war who had come out of Egypt, perished because they did not obey the voice of He Who Is. And He Who Is swore to them that He would not let them see the land that He Who Is had sworn to their fathers to give to them, a land flowing with milk and honey. So it was their children, whom He raised up in their place, that Joshua circumcised. For they were circumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. So what had happened is when Moses first came to Israel, or to the Israeli people in Egypt, at least some of them were circumcised. And then apparently Moses insisted that the rest of the guys get circumcised at that time, which they apparently did. So all the males coming out of Egypt had been circumcised. But that generation was rebellious and disobedient and very much not following God's instructions. And so they just didn't circumcise their boys. Some of them probably did, but most of them did not. So here is Joshua, first order of business as they enter the promised land is let's get all the uncircumcised of this new generation circumcised. Because that is the symbol of the covenant made with Abraham, the covenant promise. So they get it done. Verse 8, when the circumcising of the whole nation was finished, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. So the next several days, getting up to Passover, basically. And He Who Is said to Joshua, today I've rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. And so the name of that place is called Gilgal to this day, because Galal is the way you say roll in Hebrew. So Gilgal is basically the rolling place. And Galilee is kind of related to that name as well. And so this is how it got its name, Gilgal, but it was also called the Hill of the Foreskins. Well, let's mark our place and we'll get back into the Word next time we're together.